two terrific authors, and I'm excited about being here for two reasons. One, because both of them, Nathan Englander, close to me, and Sasha Stanisic, are both first novelists, which means that my job was easy in preparing for this. It meant I only had to read two books. But I think what you're going to find is that these are, if you haven't read them already, these are really two very, very extraordinary novels from two extraordinary novelists. I'm looking forward to talking to them this morning. But I first wanted to say that it's also wonderful to be talking to them here in Cartagena. I've been coming to Cartagena for over 15 years, and the change in the city is really quite remarkable over that time. The fact that that there's so many hotels, that there's so much life in here, there's so much of a feeling of freedom around the town. I think the convent Santo Domingo, where we are, is just one sign, this beautifully renovated convent, on how much Cartagena and, I think, in a way, Colombia have renovated themselves over time. I mean, after all, it wasn't that long ago when people like myself and Nathan, and I suspect probably even Sasha, might have had trouble coming into a Dominican church here in Cartagena, just one block away from the Palace of the Inquisition. So it is it's terrific to be here in Cartagena talking to them. And the first thing, I mean, I wanted to, we're going to get to start talking about the books, but because both of their books are about countries and are about reactions to countries, I wanted to ask them, what has been your reaction to Cartagena? It's your first time for both of you in the country. Nathan, what's your what have you seen so far?
It's just plain stunning, I guess. I feel very spoiled. Talk close. There you go. A compliment so nice you'll hear it twice. I think it's just stunning. It's lovely. And yeah, there's so many preconceived notions about this country, and this is a gorgeous city, and I don't know. I lived in Jerusalem for many years, so I'm super comfortable being in a walled city and twisty alleyways. It feels very homey to me.
But it's nice when the walls aren't quite as important as they are in some other places. Yeah. And Sasha, you were telling me you've had some interesting trips through Cartagena in the last few days.
Yes, I came to Cartagena now 5 days ago, so I had a little bit chance not to see the centro only. And I've met very interesting people who have a project called Tiempo Juego, Time to Play. What they do is they have in Bogota and Cartagena schools, soccer schools for kids. And then they go to socially the endangered quarters of the city and spend time with those kids and teaching them to play soccer, taking them to spend time with free time with playing with each other. So what I did yesterday, I was invited to go to a tournament outside of Cartagena, outside of the centro, where they played, basically, and they wonderful kids. And then after that, we went to the other Cartagena outside of the centro, and it was really a difficult experience, and I'm very glad that I did that, because now I think I have a little bit more complete picture of what Cartagena is, and it's not only this Disneyland here, it's more than that, and it's people who live in a very low social environment, and but still there was a wonderful moment when one of the girls who lived in the house turned on the music and started dancing just like that. And I mean, mm-hmm. This is something also kind of a prejudice that we have about Colombia, but it was that in this that 10 people living in this little house, and then suddenly they start dance in the middle of the afternoon, and I was really touched. And I couldn't kind of go back here and just go to some cocktail dinner after that. It felt suddenly, I don't know, I don't want to be moral person here, and I don't know much about it, but it felt so wrong after seeing this, and I'm going to write definitely about this contrast.
Well, that's great. I mean, I think it's, I think one of the signs of a country that has, that really has renovated itself is the fact that it invites writers in. I mean, I think it's dangerous to invite writers from outside a country. Because what they're going to do is they're going to bring their own preconceptions, like you said,
yes.
And they're going to bring them to bear on the subject. And That's good.
And also to make, I think that's maybe one of the roles of writers and journalists, to make people aware. You know, I had to read the German embassy informations on Colombia. What can I do and what can I? And I don't. The country should come to a place where you don't have to read these informations. You know, and if you know, I can make these people a little bit aware of what projects, social projects, are here. And that's, I think that's one of the basic jobs of us writers to come with our worldview but also bring other worlds in our countries back.
So, mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's something that you did, Nathan. I think when you chose your subject, I don't know. For those of you who haven't read Nathan's novel Ministry of Special Cases, it's a novel that's set in Argentina during the Dirty War, during the time of the junta, and I think in your case it was definitely a case of an outsider, of a writer coming to a foreign country and bringing in a way the same type of critique that Sasha was bringing to going into the barrios of Cartagena. I mean, how did you come to do that? How did you come to choose Cartagena, Argentina?
I guess I'm sort of obsessed with how story forms. And, you know, I already mentioned living in Jerusalem all those years. You don't notice a lot of stuff in your home country. I don't question Thanksgiving every year or when Christmas comes around. But as you know, as soon as I started living abroad, you start hearing the national narratives. You see how they change, and I guess I was shocked. It's kind of naive to say as an adult, but to find out that, you know, reality, that there are multiple realities, that it's a construct. You know, I think that's the most the biggest mistake that keeps getting made with the Palestinian and Israeli conflict is people thinking they're two ends of a spectrum. There's no spectrum. It's one reality and another reality, and until people start to understand that, there can't be peace. But yeah, living in this country that was always in conflict, I just got obsessed at how government, how a government directs a people through story. And I was looking for a good example. I don't write close up until now. I like to imagine distant to rebuild a world. And for me, thinking of cities that turn on themselves, whose people remain loyal, because there's a real connection between porteños, between the, you know, Argentines of Buenos Aires and Jerusalemites. They'll be living in New York. You know, they'll have left when they're 16 and they'll have been gone for 40 years, but everything is boca and mate, and, you know, they're super dedicated to this place that they know they're never going back to. And it seemed a really good Jerusalem metaphor. I was just amazed at what's gone wrong. And, you know, Argentina should be stronger than Russia, than China right now. It's only through corruption. It's only through military government after government that they've ended up in this situation. And I guess I just wanted to look at that city as sort of twisted Jerusalem metaphor.
Mm-hmm. So we should read it as a, not only as, I mean, should we read it as a novel about Argentina, or should we read it as a novel about Israel?
I guess I just don't worry about those labels, you know. Mm-hmm. It's because you need to be able to do your work. You know, people say, oh, you're a Jewish writer, you're a Jewish writer. Well, you know, I spent 10 years of my life obsessed with this book that is at least as Argentine as it is Jewish, and nobody's ever accidentally called me an Argentine writer. Mm-hmm. So for me, the labels, I'm just not interested.
Right. How have Argentinians reacted to the book, Argentinian writers and Argentinian
readers? Well, the Spanish edition, I guess the South American edition will be out in July. There's, they haven't gotten it in Argentina yet. There's no novel here yet. So Italy, everyone who thinks Argentina, you know, I need not tell people of Colombia, it's not a Spanish country, it's more of an Italian country. Mm-hmm. But I thought Italy was a good test case, and they were super supportive. I haven't had a good... I've had a very nice test case, because the Argentines I meet are the ones like you nice people who came out to see me. So I've met the supportive folk. We'll see. I've never been so excited and so nervous about a translation as I am about this one. So I want them either to embrace it or burn it in piles. It's the middle that I'm nervous about. Ignoring is bad.
It's pretty much the same with my translation for my book to Bosnian languages, because this is the place where it's stated and you can see some geographical references. Excuse me. And so you're of course more anxious about this translation than about any else. But I also want it to be. You know, I want to provoke feelings, and they cannot sort me either. So I come from a mixed family, and my father is Serb, my mother is Bosniak Muslim, and so every side is already right now trying to say, "Oh, this is a Serb writer. He has a Serb name." No, wait, his mother is Bosniak, and I like that. This is, you cannot. You know, it's not me that should be sort of my work. Read it and try to do something with it for your life, but don't try to sort me. And I like this, to stand between the worlds. It's kind of a nice position to be in.
Yeah, it's It's an interesting difference, though, between the two of you, in a sense, because in Sasha's book, I've just assumed, since I only met Sasha today, and I'm sure you all have assumed, those of you who have read the book or will read it, that the main character is, in fact, Sasha. In other words, we all assume that that the writer is his main character in through there. And I'm sure I'm wrong, but I'm sure I'm right as well, in some senses. But in Nathan's case, it's interesting because his main character is a Jew named Kadosh Poznan, but it's an interesting novel in that it's not a novel about Jews in Argentina, in Buenos Aires. It's a novel in which the main character happens to be Jewish.
It's a strange thing. It's so weird, I know mostly the American book business, but it'll be like that idea, like if another friend, it's a very small community and we end up at these things around the world, everyone knows it. But if there's two Jewish books, people will be like, which one should I read? Nobody says there's two books written by Christians this year. I'm confused. It's just such a strange notion. But it's odd to say, Jews are people too. Like the idea is, fiction is a craft. It's like building a table. If you put four legs on a piece of wood and your glass doesn't fall off, that's a table. But then there's another line where you can make art, where something can be of great. And I feel like that's what writing is. And I feel like stories not functioning unless it's universal. I mean, that's the beautiful thing about sitting here and we're talking about, some of you with headphones, it's Spanish and you're from where you're from. And we live in three different countries right now, our Roman friend. Mm-hmm. But, that's the idea. I think it's just so moot. I can't imagine how few of my books are about of my favorite books are about worlds that I'm connected to. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just such a strange new modern literature sales thing where, even Jews will ask me, can I give this book to my Gentile friend? nobody gives you like Candide and says, I know you're not 400 years old and French and you've never been disemboweled, but like, can you give it a try? It's just a strange new modern concept that you have to be like the subject of a book.
Except just to play devil's advocate for a moment, I don't know how many of you went to hear Martin Amis yesterday at the Teatro Heredia, but he talked about his time in Cali, where he was doing a journalistic assignment with Médecins Sans Frontières, and he said some remarks that people in the audience took as being disparaging remarks about Cali. And I've got to tell you, I spent the rest of the evening hearing people very, very upset where the confusion between the subject that a writer writes about and what they feel is their homeland is extremely intense. And I'm wondering, I think, also in your case, Sasha, what's going to be the reaction of people from your former homeland when they read your take on Bosnia during the Civil War of, 92?
Yeah, that's a question that bothers me a lot, of course, too. Yeah. But, I cannot mind too much. I did my best to create a reality in my book and to have a story told that I wanted to tell. And so it's now there. The ball is in their part of the court. And I cannot really help them anymore. I did what I could do the best. But it's still, actually, it's my parents who are much more anxious about it than myself. Because, I do name crimes and I do point to genocide happening. And I do it from a perspective of a boy, but I still do it. And I'm not trying to keep my eyes closed from what happened in Bosnia during the Civil War, horrible atrocities, and not all people will be glad to read about that. And it's not the only book which has been written about it, and that's good. I think when something as radical as a war happens to a country, you need writers, journalists and historians to work hand in hand to describe this conflict from each perspective. But it's not much different than my book is being translated to Hebrew too, so it's not much different because I tend to see it as a much more universal theme than just Bosnia, and I want people in Israel and people in Colombia to relate to this conflict, because in Colombia you have displaced persons as well, you have refugees, you have a war going on, you have gang fights, and all of these things are also in my book. And as if you as a Colombian and an Israeli reader can relate to this and get something from it, then actually it's the same importance for me as the Bosnian side.
No, I just like what, sort of how Sasha started his answer, because it's a very simple, he started by saying it's creating a reality, and I think that's the whole obligation.
Absolutely.
You know, because there's this separate thing. It's sort of that idea, like Orwell can write politically because that's his head. But if you have this high-minded thing, I'm going to spread a story, that it's so corrupting to a fiction. And I totally agree with you. You're just telling a story, and then there's this separate thing. I mean, you asked before how I got to Argentina, but part of it was the fact of not knowing where these genocides happen, where people are disappearing. You know, even that idea of the dirty war that they say, it's 25 years later, 15 to 30,000 people disappeared, you know, give or take the whole number. You know, if we did that with the Holocaust, it's 3 to 6 million Jews. You know, to me, it's madness. And if I hadn't met Argentines when I was, the fact that I grew up in New York in a straight line, same time zone, and just never heard about this, to me, it was just madness that something so big and so horrible could happen in my hemisphere, in my lifetime. And Americans just don't know. It's only when I'm abroad, you know, I don't have to say in Italy or in Holland, they're still, Holland's still upset about the World Cup. You know, they can't even get, that's the first question at every Dutch reading. They want to talk about their loss. But, you know, in America, I have to start the story that we just, nobody has heard about the dirty war.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting that, you know, you mentioned the World Cup and that you, Sasha, were talking about soccer with the, about football with the kids here in Cartagena. The connection of war and soccer is a great literary connection, but a great historical connection. If you've read Richard Kapuscinski's Soccer Wars, there's one part of Sasha's book that I just wanted to mention because I wanted to ask you about it, Sasha, which is a football match that happens between the Serbs and the Bosnians. And as Sasha describes it, he says, and they play soccer, it's during the war, but it's during a ceasefire. And let me just read you a little bit of a passage, and maybe you can tell me about it, which goes like this. The Serbs had won the last two ceasefires, 5-2 and 2-1. A man named Milan Jevric, nicknamed Mickey Mouse, had scored 3 of their 5 goals in the first match. Mickey Mouse was a farmer's boy, age 20, 2 meters 6 tall, and weighing 100 kilos, maybe as many as 30 of them in the great rock of a head with its projecting nose and sparse tufts of hair all carried on his bull-like neck. He was really an inside defender and surprised himself more than anyone with his goal-scoring prowess when he stormed ahead at the beginning of the second half, took aim from a distance of 30 meters, and hit Dino Zoff right in the face. Dino didn't come round until Marco, one of the Serbian forwards, held some schnapps under his nose, and for the next 2 hours he spoke nothing but fluent Latin, quoting several Ciceronian maxims. Now, tell me about this, Sasha, this football match, because you know, it's full of the kind of detail that you expect, that you hear you know, every Sunday afternoon in Rome when I'm listening to the matches.
Yeah,
But there's some differences.
Well, I'm a huge fan. I'm a huge soccer fan, and I it's hard to say this in Colombia, but you have kind of a mediocre team. You guys are okay until like short before the goal, but you can score. Why? I mean, why? You play beautiful football, but then suddenly you have a fear to score. Just shoot that ball, you know?
You know, Sasha, you've just now saved Martin's ass. Because, you know, you're now number one enemy, you know?
No, please win some games, you know? Not only against Venezuela, like yesterday. No, you look for, when you write about the war, you don't want to take the perspective of a journalist walking around or a perspective of a soldier. I mean, that's been told a lot of times. What I was looking for is a symbol of to show how absurd it is, a war between neighbors. Those guys who play these games, they know each other from school. And they stop the ceasefire and then just go out and talk. And then when the ceasefire is over, they go back and shoot. And I have a friend who was fighting in the woods and above Sarajevo. And I asked him, I just actually wanted to know, how is life, the practical sides of living in this situation, having the enemy basically across the field. So, and he told me what you do with your, you know, how you wash yourself, how you get rid of your garbage, like very practical things that I wanted to know. And then he told me about this, that in the last couple of months, when the war was kind of getting tired, they would go out and basically exchange prisoners. They would sell cigarettes and alcohol to each other, whatever the ones had and the others didn't. And I wanted to make a joke because it was kind of tense. It was like, did you play something? And he says, yeah, we played cards. Did you play football? And he said, no. And I was like, oh, bad joke again. And I asked, why not? And he said, we didn't have a ball. So what I did, I basically gave them the ball. Yeah. So and I created everything what he told me about those fighting in this way, and then created this game between friends who are friends in the peacetime and now have to shoot each other. And the most, let's call him the most stupid one, the most naive one, the one with less education is the one who actually saves the asses of everybody else in this game because he just wants to play. He does understand the concept of the game. It is, we want to finish this game, and that's how he saves lives from many, many people.
Now, this episode was one of many episodes. The I mean, one of the remarkable things I think about your book is that it's one of the great things that novels can get away with is that it's a very messy, it's a very sloppy book. There's all kinds of stuff in it. You even include an essay by the main character about what he did on his summer vacation. You know, a little novel he wrote when he was young, and it moves forward and back in time, and it's all over the place. And, you know, and works tremendously well.
Yeah, I smuggled that. I wrote it myself when I was 12.
And you finally got it out, and you finally published. But how, I mean, was this in fact written over a long period of time?
Yes, it's pieces of let's say 5 years of gathering memories, gathering my own diary entries, talking to friends, to people who I know, then going back to Bosnia, talking to generals in war, talking to politicians. And that's why it has this mosaic structure. At some point, I found a chronological narration or just following from A to B, from B to C, just not fitting to describe what I wanted to describe, to tell all these stories. So I had all these voices in my head and all these interviews and all these materials. And I was like, okay, just go with it. Go the way how you were told this thing. So you can hear basically in this book, every single member of his family has a monologue or a longer piece where he has to talk. And that's the way a story is not always a story. If you tell the same event and I tell the same event and Nathan goes tell the same event, we will tell different stories. And that's what I wanted to create. Different little realities in this big course of
angels.
That's right. Even now, they're going to try and drown us out. No, it's. But Nathan, you also took a long time writing your novel. You took.
I am slow.
You took. Eight. Well, you had never done this before, right? So this is.
It's my iPod.
No, I mean you had written. Yeah, Nathan, by the way, has written also a marvelous book of short stories for the relief of unbearable urges.
Thanks.
So he bought himself as much time as he wanted.
Yeah,
for
I was
going
to say. I think when, it was both a blessing to have all that time. I think if things go right, which I was thankful for, then everyone lets you be the tortured artist. I wish maybe they'd put the thumb screws a little tighter. But I just think a book takes what it takes. It was just a compulsive, you know. For me, I think going from stories to a novel, it's almost like if you have a successful collection. It's like having a successful gallery show of paintings, and then they give you a blowtorch and say, you know, now you're an industrial sculptor. And that was really, it felt like starting again, learning a novel. And I just was, I just didn't want it to be a group of linked stories. It has to be its own.
Well, one of the strengths of it is that you came up with this fantastic main character, Kadish Poznan. I mean, tell them a little bit about, for those who don't know, you know, who he is and what makes him special. And how did you come up with such a character?
Oh, I guess I just got interested in the idea of heroism. You know, there's the Yiddish idea of the shlemiel and the shlemazel. Like, you know, the shlemiel spills the soup and the shlemazel's the guy that gets soup spilled on him. That's how you break it down. And I've done a million interviews around this book, and I just can't take when people ask if a failed hero, if he has to be pitiful or a shlemiel. You know, it's a complicated story, and I simplify it this way. Like, nothing goes right for Kadish, and for me, it was an exploration of heroism, you know, in a complex form. Because if it's a smaller form, we get it. If a man runs into a burning building to save a child, and the building falls, and he's killed in the fire, we don't say, how pitiful, what a loser. You know, we say, this is a hero. And I really wanted to look at notions of heroism and intent. Isn't it enough to try? But, to skip through everything. Basically, there's in Argentina, there's a middle class, and the Jews, when they got there, they wanted to move up and not move down like any other country with a middle class. And at the time, at the turn of the century, they had, you know, we know all the Jewish jobs when they came to America from Russia, the tailor, the baker, we know all these things. In Argentina, they were also the pimps and the prostitutes, a representative number. But this idea of hearing about Jewish whorehouses interested me. And these women, in America, we only make pretty prostitute ideas. It's pretty woman. It's eating caviar with Richard Gere in a hotel. It's a pretty miserable job in turn of the century Buenos Aires. But But these women, they wanted to worship, they wanted to go to synagogue, and they wanted to be buried as Jews. And the Jews in the community, they were ashamed and they wouldn't have them. So these women were told, we will not have you. And they put up literally a wall in the cemetery. And to me, you know, this book is an exploration of community. And the idea of one Jew looking at another and saying, I will not be buried with you, to me was the ultimate failure of community. You know, the idea that these women are resigned. And I went to visit those cemeteries. It will be pristine, gorgeous cemetery, not much bigger than this room. And then over the wall, weeds and broken headstones and forgotten graves. And to me, that kind of punishment, it's a punishment for eternity. And once I heard that, it was, you know, I was smitten.
Well, I mean, going back to that, to what you said earlier about Jerusalem being the, in a way, the motive to write about Argentina, this wall that that was created in the cemetery between the children and the between the grandparents of the, or I guess between the hookers and the pimps and the good Jews.
Yeah.
What's that wall then? Is that the wall between between different types of Israelis in Israel, or is it?
Yeah, no, I
or
guess.
Or between the Jews and the Palestinians.
You know, you might understand it better here, but in America, the horrible, horrible, horrible discovery I made when I got to Israel. You know, it's a very small country, and my balcony, you know, it looked out on the Knesset, on the Parliament, on the Supreme Court, and you know, it's not like. I just didn't understand. In America, I knew, that, you know, and thank God that we've got a new one. But, you know, I just didn't understand that governments were run by people. And that was this horrible discovery that the president, you know, George Bush had his own treadmill. Like, Bibi Netanyahu would work out at my gym. And to start to understand, you know, my first book, I was religious, then I was secular. And every one of those stories is about breaking through the wall, about crossing worlds, smashing through. It was about crossing boundaries. And I lived this Jewish experience in America in my very much a Jewish ghetto in suburbia, like a ghetto with a shopping mall. That's how you should picture it. But, you know, to get to Israel and start to see all the other levels of community. But, you know, it's, again, and I don't even know what to say about these last weeks in Israel and Gaza, but I just got obsessed. You know, everyone just wants to send their kids to school and know that they're going to come home. And it was this idea of walking to my coffee shop and walking back and thinking, am I going to get dead today? That sort of broke down politics. You read the paper and say, of course, this one has to respond, that one has to respond, but it's simple. When Hamas blows up a bus in Jerusalem and kills Jews, they are murdering Palestinians in Gaza. Because we're going to send out an F-16 and drop a one-ton bomb on their fucking houses. And when Israel, to defend Israel, drops a one-ton bomb on Gaza, they were just blowing up buses in Jerusalem. And I just said, forget politics, forget everything. The guy in the building over there has just done something that is going to blow up this town. When Netanyahu opened that tunnel under the Temple Mount, you know, like 75 people died that day. And it just became this madness to me that people, you know, once I understood there was no distance, that government is just men, I could not get rid of this obsession of the decisions. And that's why Buenos Aires, you know, I just want to look at that thing. And the idea of thinking, don't I have a right to get coffee and not die? I also recognize what a spoiled American concept that was, that so many other countries don't even think, like, my individual life has value. And I really just became obsessed with the value of the individual life and its relation to government.
I mean, do you ever feel, I mean, I think it's, you know, very well said that you've got to, that you've got the urge to say this in this direct, non-fictional type of way, as well as the fictional?
This is a question of coward. I'm fully cowardly, you know. I mean, I think that's the idea. I'm always interested in, like, in my friends that are, you know, lawyers or politicians and, you know, people who are willing to point a finger. I would never come here and say, I've come to Cartagena to call you out for this and that and, you know, I don't know. I just never feel, who am I? You know, back to one Jew judging another and saying, you need to be buried over the wall. I don't, if you said to me right now, your name's not Nathan, it's David, I wouldn't say my name is Nathan. I would first consider and think, I always assume everybody else is maybe right, and that should be considered. So that's why I don't do nonfiction. I'm, you know, the point is being raised in a, and this is not to simplify religion. I think it's just not for me. But I grew up in a black and white world, and everything was yes and no and prescribed. And the idea is, once I left that world, I had to rebuild a morality. Everything became gray, you know? And it was that idea where I'm like, thou shalt not kill, I'll keep that commandment. Thou shalt not commit adultery. If you're really unhappy and you're stuck and you can't get out, you know, that's a commandment that can bend, you know? So I just think, I don't know, fiction allows me to build the whole universe from scratch, and that's where I'm willing to point fingers. So I would never go to the Jews of Buenos Aires and say, you failed each other, you did this. But in a book, you know, I always think that's it. Most people, they always imagine if they had a previous life, they were a king, and also that they'd be a hero. You know, I think I might be, you know, in World War II, I'd be like, behind the bookcase, there were Jews. You know, it's only in fiction I feel like I can build the whole world and then build the morality within it.
Mm-hmm. In the way that that Nathan spent some time in Jerusalem, Sasha, you moved, it seems to me, from a world in which things were all kinds of colors into a world in which things became very quickly black and white. And then at that point, your family, I take it, escaped to Germany, and you spent the rest of your, adolescence and then into adulthood living in that world. Was that a world that had more colors in it, or was
more what?
More colors. Was it?
No, definitely not. Germany does not have more colors than Bosnia. No, no. It was at the beginning. It was always the notion of we are going back. This war can't last longer than a couple of weeks. So we lived out of suitcases. Basically, we were waiting for the situation to be safe for us to go back to just continue on living. But it wouldn't stop. So it just went on and went on for years. And that's. When you live between the worlds like that, when you don't belong here right now and don't belong there, nothing really seems to be as important as just getting out to get something to eat and then live through the day and then wait to continue with your own life. And I was 14, so I didn't know much about the world, but I did. You know, when you see the picture of your own town burning in the TV, and then you don't know what the guy who is commenting these pictures is saying. And that creates this kind of an absence of reality in yourself, and you want to say these things, and it's mostly very, very nostalgic back then. So you want to create the words for these pictures. And that's basically how I work until today. I try to see as many pictures, to hear as many voices, even the ones who I don't understand, in order to make, as humble as it can be, something out of that, to create something new, a new perspective. And the first time in Germany was, at some point, I had to go to school. At some point, you know, I started to learn a new language, and it became a shelter very fast. It became maybe also a shelter for not understanding these things, to be protected by being somewhere else where things were completely all right, you know, where we were refugees, but we were treated well. You know, everybody was concerned, and we ourselves were concerned. And at some point, the language and being here in the school had became my haven, had became something really important for my life, and that's what I'm thankful until today, to have this opportunity to just have a normal education and to learn this language in which I write today. So Germany was really, really important for me, but I never, you know, stopped going back to Bosnia. I never stopped relating myself to the political issues there, and I never will. This is something, a geographical and political atmosphere which really intrigues me. We have a lot of corruption there. We have a lot of crime and unemployment there, and those are things I think I need to see what this makes out of the people who didn't have that as a hard life as it is now back then. So
you think there is a possibility of going back there someday?
Well, yeah. I actually tried. I spent there a year where I basically tried to return to. I was 22 and. It was just not working for me. It was just not, you know, I was like, I think every immigrant has this gap between the worlds in him. No matter if he left the country as a refugee or did it on a free will, what is culture? Culture is what we eat, what we think when we see a dance, that's culture. Those little details which make this huge, huge painting on our inside of our head walls. So what I did is try to connect to that, but I just failed completely. It was not a mistake of a country or anybody there. It was my own not being able to adapt or to enjoy even, you know. And so, you know, I'm now nothing more than an observer and traveler and tourist in my own homeland, which tries to, you know, I will never cry to a German song, but I will cry to a Bosnian song. And that's something which tells me a lot about how my emotional home and my, you know, pragmatic home where the language is.
Yeah, well, there's something I think in both of your books and the way you talk about it that there, are serious sort of physical attachments. I think when you talk, Nathan, in terms of, we were walking, I think, around Cartagena, and you were talking about the walls of Cartagena and the walls of Jerusalem, or when you write, Sasha, about the river Drina, I mean, this is, there, I mean, that river itself is a mixed blessing for you from your town. Right.
It is you know, the story about the river. Imagine having a river and nobody goes swimming in there anymore because so people were killed in there. So nobody who knows the history of the town and the genocide, 3,000 people who disappeared from this town, and just doesn't go to swim to a river, which is the most beautiful river which you can find, you know. And the bridge who actually should connect us is the bridge on which you could see killings every day. And it is something that these people have to live with, and I can only relate to this like a little bug who comes there and who tries to, you know, to bite little pieces of there what they saw and just try to carry them in and shelter those like a hamster, basically. Mm-hmm. And this is something, I don't know, when you talk to people from my home country who stayed there during the whole war and afterwards, it's a completely different notion that I have from a distance of being, you know, safe in Germany, and it's always going to be this distance to that.
Now, both of you, I mean, have tried to get these ideas across. I know, Nathan, you were saying you're resisting the nonfiction route entirely. But both of you have also played around with theater as being a way of telling your stories as well. Do these stories, you know, are these other ways of getting back to a homeland that no longer exists? Are you... You know, is it another type of ticket?
After, you know, I've been writing for a million years. I'm just excited to... When I found out there's other people involved, I was kind of just thrilled. You know, when I'm alone in a room all day. I'm kind of excited to work with anyone. So, and it's just a wonderful form. I don't know. I guess I like that learning curve. Everything becomes... If you're a writer, you are surely a compulsive and an obsessive, and it becomes this all-consuming, crazy thing. And then it's just nice to start in a new form because everything, it's so untroubled. You know, every bit of knowledge I gain, I can feel the neurosis coming. It's going to become this complex. But yeah, just the freedom of working in a new form is kind of, I don't know, it's just raw and exciting.
Right. So it's not so much that somehow they'll get it this time if you put it on stage. It's, I mean, you were talking about, you know, how nice it would be to have an opening with people put on ties.
Yeah, I was excited. Yeah. I was like, we'll get to go somewhere. We'll put suits on. We'll have an opening night. You're all invited.
Drink some champagne.
Good food. What about with you, Sasha? Because you've turned How the Soldier Repairs a Gramophone into a play yourself. Yeah. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. But I also, I wrote two other plays which I don't have to do anything with the subject of Bosnia and World War. I was really intrigued. I don't like theater at all. When I go there, in Germany, if you sit in the first row in a theater, you will definitely get banana on your suit or blood, artificial blood. There is something really strange going up there. They throw stuff, they walk around naked and they spill stuff on you. I don't know why. And I just had this notion in my head, I want to create something where people will spill from something that I've created stuff on other people.
Much better.
So I put as much as artificial blood as I can and stuff. I just like that. And then I also really wanted to learn how to direct. And I was thinking, okay, how can I do this in a most lazy way? And writing is kind of, you know, sit back and just write. And I was like, okay, if I write something, they will maybe invite me to some rehearsals. When they invite me to a rehearsal, I will be really interested into directing, and that will get me to directing. And that was actually basically a job application which I wrote back then. Mm-hmm. So that's it.
And it's worked out well. You've had fun doing
I had a lot of fun doing it. And now, right now I offered a little piece, Patrick Süskind, The Perfume.
Yeah.
I've offered to direct that in a little theater. And I was like, okay, yes, it worked actually, basically very good. So I'll do that next year.
Are you doing the adaptation yourself?
Yes, I am. Yes, I am.
Well, I was just going to say, I also think it's people who love forms that are in trouble, like as if it's not hard enough to live life as a writer of fiction. You know, I was on a movie friend and an actress's big Hollywood set, and I was saying, I was, you know, telling the director that I was working on a play, and he said, you know, we have cameras now. And I thought, like, you know, I think it's just such a charming, you know, it's that idea that I think these forms need to live, and there's something, you know, half of Broadway is closed right now, and I think, you know, fiction is bleak enough. I kind of love that I found a form that's more troubling.
And this work, what you just mentioned, you go there, and there's basically actors who, when you come, and after a while, after a week or two, they start to free themselves from you being a writer, and they tell you, Sasha, this doesn't work. Nobody talks like this. I cannot, there's no rhythm. And you actually basically work on the text, and that's what I really loved about the second piece of mine, Go West. It's called We at some point it became to be our play. The director, the artist, they would sit down, they would think about how we can change these things to make it just like better, to sound better, to relate more to the actual piece. And I like that. It felt more like actually creating something together, in the contrary to I give them something and they, you know, they can make whatever they want with that.
No, that's lovely. I just recommend that you never do that in the United States, okay. Because then on opening night the actors come to you and they say, you know, I really wrote half this play, didn't I? So give me your money.
Okay.
Well, let me turn it now over to you in the audience for any of you who have any questions for our writers. I think we've got a few microphones around somewhere. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
A few microphones.
Oh, okay, sorry. If you want to listen to these.
Oh, yeah. Thank you.
Okay. I better take one, too. Thanks. Okay, so you can ask in either English or Spanish, and if they answer funny, it just is the fault of the translator. yes, a question there in the back, the woman in the back. Yes. Can we bring a microphone up?
For her? No idea.
I'm trying to get the assistants to exercise as much in the sun as possible. Okay, yes, ma'am.
It's for both of you. When you, I don't know if you've met before or not, but when you do, what do you talk about with each other?
Oh, I always call these, I can jump on that one, I call these things writer's camp, these trips. It's like sleepaway camp for us, you know. We just go and we all end up on a bus together going to the same hotel. So
it's
just
like a school trip.
Yeah. We all, you know, immediately that's the mutual friend and I have, you know, we have each other's books at home and, you know, we're already trading names instantly. It's just a lovely... I have to say this is a nice generation. You know, I feel like so many other generations of writers have been super self-destructive and just drinking themselves to death and sniping each other. I just find it to be super warm. I get a lot of comfort out of meeting other writers.
But you can also do a box match if you like.
Yeah. I'm a weight class above you, I think.
Yeah, I think.
He's got long arms.
I'm waiting for the soccer match.
I was actually trying to stalk Nathan in New York. I was there when and a mutual friend of ours told me a secret, gave me his favorite writing place where I could find him. And I read his book and I wanted to go like a fan and just get a signature on that. So I tried to find him, but he was never there. So I think it's a huge legend that he's there. Didn't work out.
Because yesterday, Martin was saying that when a man dies, he thinks about how he dealt with his females during his life.
His females? Wow.
Yes. Is that, you really talk only about writing?
No.
Okay.
Well, they in fact only met this morning, and I can guarantee you that there wasn't enough time. It was very strange because I've come to Cartagena for many years, and Colombia does have the most beautiful women in the entire world. And they did not mention females the entire trip down here. However, I'm sure you've put something into their heads now.
Yes.
Another question. Yes, down here in the front. You have a microphone for the young woman down.
Good morning. This question is for Nathan. You were talking about that all your experiences, you become obsessed and like you really can't let that go. So I'm planning to be a writer, but I think that I have heard many writers say that they have become obsessed and like... I don't know. They can't let go of things. I'm a little worried. I think that's something to worry about.
I'm not. Then I'm already not worried for you. I think anything that you're aware of to worry about means that the checks and balances are turned on. So if you weren't worried, I always say there's no way I can be sure that someone's fiction is worse than if I meet them and they're confident about it. You know, if you're so. I'm not worried. And you know what? I guess this, you know, not to talk about craft, but I'm upset. You know, religion is a rhythm. I do yoga now, namaste. But like everything, the idea is it's not a natural construct. You know, you don't wait for inspiration. I'm talking to you now older and I train myself to be obsessive. You know, my mother can't tell enough people that this is the laziest boy she's ever seen. You know, I spent 20 years in suburbia watching TV on the couch. So I really do think, yes, it has to become all-consuming and obsessive, but you literally, like a sport, you train yourself. You sit half an hour, 2 hours. I used to time myself, you know, 6 days a week, 3 hours a day, you compose and with a clock until you way surpass that.
If I may add, discipline, I think discipline is really a key word. For me, it became like a sport, like really somebody who plays soccer, he will not play the first team if he doesn't train every day. And to train every day, you have to have the discipline to do it. And it's, for me, at least, it's less about inspiration and having ideas. I have too much ideas. But it's about sitting down and not having anybody to tell you, do it. You have to tell it yourself to do it. And it becomes, you know, it can only become an obsession if you're really obsessed by doing it really almost every day. I didn't write today, and I already feel strange.
Yeah. No, Amos Oz, the Israeli writer, has a
great... Oh, he has that. That's a great metaphor.
You know his metaphor where he says that he's like a grocer, and he says, every day I go and I open the store, and I wait for customers. Someday there are customers, some days there are no customers. But if I don't go and open the store, there will certainly not be any customers. So,
very good impression of Amos.
Thank you. Don't shoot me either. Another question. We've got someone over here.
Hello. Muy bien.
Oops.
Bueno, esto es para Sasha. Yo quería, o sea, usted al inicio dijo que había estado visitando un barrio y que estaba un barrio en las afueras de Cartagena y que estaba muy contento por haberlo hecho. Yo creo que esa es una experiencia bien válida. Lo que pasa es que yo también quería sugerirle algo, que si usted quisiera, o sea, que el problema de los cordones tan pobres de Cartagena es mucho, o sea, va mucho más allá de lo que puede una persona conocer durante un solo día. Entonces, este es un problema. La mayoría de la gente que está allí, yo he vivido en Cartagena, he estado permanentemente vinculada a esta ciudad por afecto y por todo. Y conozco más o menos bien los problemas. Mucha de esa gente que usted visitó ayer es desplazada por la violencia, por un conflicto terrible que nosotros tenemos interno, y que sería muy difícil que usted pudiera describir con la sola visita de un día. Entonces, en el conflicto colombiano hay muchos ingredientes. Hay mucho dolor, hay mucha incomprensión, hay una gran dosis de injusticia social, hay un problema de narcotráfico terrible, y no hay que olvidar que nosotros, desafortunadamente, somos el país más vilipendiado del mundo. No existe ningún otro país que yo imagine, del cual se habla muchas veces injustamente afuera y de una manera muy ligera. Entonces, sería muy interesante tener su visita mucho más larga para que aprenda o entienda realmente lo que es un problema como el que nosotros tenemos, que produce efectos como ese tan dolorosos. La gente en el sur de Bolívar se vino sobre todo a Cartagena porque era, digamos, la opción de una ciudad que tenía una fama impresionante y era como su única posibilidad. De manera que yo lo invito a que esté con nosotros más tiempo para poder describirlo como nos merecemos y no llamarnos aquí adentro este Disneyland, no sé, bueno, porque la verdad es que nosotros consideramos que esta ciudad tiene mucha historia, mucho corazón, mucho encanto, y no nos gusta la palabra Disney.
If I may just answer a little bit to that, of course, I will never write a piece about this without understanding more than I just saw. I want to write a piece about Tiempo de Juego, this soccer school. That's the only thing. To visit the outskirts of Cartagena was a bonus trip to me, and I would never even try to write about background of how and why these people are there, how they live. It was a personal urge for me to see the other Cartagena, because I think if you just see this part of the city, you didn't see everything. And I will concentrate completely on my story, but I accept your invitation, and I would really like to come back again and stay a little bit longer.
I think one of the wonderful things about the Hay Festival, about the fact that this festival exists here in Cartagena, is that you're inviting outsiders to come in even for a brief time. And what writers do is writers make judgments. They can't help but make judgments. And they always fail. But Nathan and I were talking about this the other day. I think what we hope to do is every time we come back is, in the words of Samuel Beckett, is to fail better the next time. I think we have time for one more question. We have... I think behind you, detrás. Oh. Okay, you get the question.
Quería apoyar lo que acabas de decir y que una de las dificultades más grandes de esta sociedad es la madurez para aceptar la realidad, al parecer por la reacción de hoy y de ayer con Martin Amis, porque somos eso es y venimos a eso, a ver la interpretación de la gente que nos viene a visitar. Muchas gracias.
Do we have maybe just one last question? That's nice. Yeah.
Thank you. This is a question for Nathan. Have you, as a writer, as a Jewish writer, have you planned to write a novel or about the conflict between the Israelis and the Palestinian? And from your point of view, from a writer who's a Jewish living in New York, what's your view about all the conflict that's going on between your people and the Palestinians?
Yeah, I think, I mean, Sasha described it so beautifully. I mean, that's the point of fiction. One conflict is all conflicts, you know? And that was the madness. I guess I'm obsessed with inevitability. I'll stop saying obsessed. But this idea that things, we only talk about things as if they had to be, you know, September 11th, it had to it didn't have to happen. There were 1,000 things before that. You know, it's after the fact. I went to Jerusalem to make peace, and it was there in the street. And that's, you know, it's exactly, it sounds like, you know, when you talk about Bosnia and Yugoslavia, but this idea where people would say, you know, I'd go into an Arab village, I remember my first time there, and they'd say, oh, we used to go to the bat mitzvah, and, you know, and the old Jews would say, oh, I used to, like, I guess I can't believe it was so simple. Everyone knows. My answer is that everybody knows the map. I could draw it for you now. Everybody knows what the two-state solution looks like. But to me, it's just a huge, huge, huge frustration because all this killing is just killing before what we already know. You know, it's right there. But in terms of writing about it, I guess I don't know if I've even admitted it out loud, but I always write distant. Until now, I think I really am going to write about the next book is going to be that story.
Mm-hmm. Sasha, do you have anything to say about that? I mean, are you going to be writing always? Do you think about the Bosnian conflict?
No. My second book is completely. It's still a kind of result of a conflict. It's about second as. Aftermath of the Second World War, but for the moment, I just think it's kind of it's now only become a personal interest. But I do not want to engage any more fiction in it. If I write, it's going to be a journalistic point of view. And I think it just kind of those 5 years are just too much for me right now. And there's so many more things which I'm obsessed with. Now I'm going to take over that word and which really now intrigue me much more than the conflict itself. And that's why I'm going to go over to that.
No, and I think it's an important thing to comment on that you asked about, you asked Nathan about whether he would write about the conflict between the Palestinians and your people. Nathan's an American who's happens to be Jewish. He's not an Israeli. And I think that we're complex people, that there's a difference between the Jews in America and the Israelis. In the same way, I think there's a difference within Sasha, who has a Serb father and a Bosnian mother. And I think even with the woman who spoke about Cartagena, that I suppose if you got 10 Cartageneros in a room, that you would find 11 different personalities there as well. The nice thing is that, just to finish off, that we are all, you know, our people, I think, are all of you, readers out there. So on behalf of Sasha and Nathan, myself, thank you very much for being our people and coming
today.
Thank you
so much.
Thank you very much.